Playing God, the Problem of Arrogance. Hello, this is Doug Clark. Welcome to Probe. We encounter on Probe this week a collection of prophetic speeches against foreign nations around ancient Judah. What in the world are they doing in the Bible? How can they possibly be helpful? Why should we spend any time at all thinking and talking about them? To help us answer these questions, I have again asked Drs. Alden Thompson and Zdravko Stefanovic to be my guests. Both teach Old Testament at Walla Walla College. Welcome to both of you to Probe.
Thank you.
It might actually help us as we think about what I just automatically tumble to as an odd idea in the books of the prophets. We have what are technically called oracles against the nations, O-A-N as an abbreviation. And they show up in all of the prophets except one, Hosea. And some of the prophets are entirely oracles against the nations. Obadiah isn't a long one. It's only one chapter, but it's all about Edom. Nahum is all about Assyria and Nineveh. What in the world should we do with these? To whom were they addressed? What value do they have? Let's just talk about oracles against foreign nations, especially since there are 11 chapters, one-sixth of Isaiah, that contain them.
Well, on the surface, Doug, it would appear to be a rather impolite thing to do, because is this any way to talk about your neighbors? I mean, it would be one thing if you were saying nice things about your neighbors, but, boy, that's heavy weather.
They're quite consistently judgmental.
Let's be, first of all, positive. In Isaiah chapter 2, many nations, you know, they band together and they go to Zion to worship God. And the prophet says, because they will be doing that, O house of Jacob, why don't we walk not to the light of the world, but of the Lord, but in the light of the Lord? So the prophet does not only address those nations, but also would like to make the people of Judah jealous or use it in his call to God's people.
In fact, you'll see that later on in Isaiah, in 60 to 62, the role of the nations is an intriguing one. And you have a number of places where the nations become kind of refuges of safety. Even Egypt, you know, we think about Israel coming out of Egypt, but we have in Isaiah that Egypt is actually a place of refuge, a place to go to. But what are technically called the oracles against nations are judgmental against them. Do we imagine that these speeches were to be delivered to the nations, like to Babylon or to Assyria or to Egypt or to Edom? Or were these somehow addressed to Israelites as a way of communicating something about God and his protection?
Well, given Israel's tendency to be tempted by surrounding nations, maybe this is a way of cooling their ardor, but going to their neighbors if the neighbors are in that bad trouble. But I can't imagine, you know, sending a political message to a foreign king and saying, guess what? Isaiah's here to talk to you.
Is it something more than if you're talking about your neighbors, especially neighbors who were threats? Is that then something of a positive message? I mean, to Israel? It's truly negative to these national entities because they are going to end up destroyed. That's what most of these are about. Is saying that that the nations around you who have been a source of threat to you are going to get their just desserts, is that good news or bad news?
Well, maybe both. It's good news because we can talk of real oppression in Old Testament times. The kingdom of Judah was sandwiched between Egypt and the powers of the north. On the other hand, when we read Amos, begins with these oracles against nations so that he would get amens from people until he gets to Israel and Judah. And then we see that
lowers the hammer.
So it's both. It's a message of comfort on the one hand. On the other hand, every Israelite would ask, why are the nations judged by God? And so on. Mm-hmm. And then they would say, could it be that we also have a sense of pride that very often separates us from God?
Mm-hmm. So you see a both and approach there as well. You mentioned the word pride, and I mentioned something about that in my introductory comments, arrogance. How important to Bible writers, not just to Isaiah, but how important to Bible writers is the problem that we could call hubris or arrogance or pride? How significant is that in the Bible?
Well, it's terribly significant, and especially significant in Isaiah. And one place where you see that perhaps clearest is in this Isaiah chapter 14, where you have the oracle, which Christians have interpreted as being part of the history of Satan, but it's given first of all in the Old Testament. How are you fallen from heaven, O day star, son of dawn? How are you cut down to the ground, you who laid the nations low? You said in your heart, I will ascend to heaven. I will raise my throne above the stars of God. I will sit on the mount of assembly, on the heights of Tzaphon. I will ascend to the tops of the clouds. I will make myself like the Most High. That's pride. The next line, but you will be brought down to Sheol, to the depths of the pit.
And then what happens in Sheol is most interesting, because when the proud emperor comes down, everybody gets up to mock him. They stare at him and they say, we thought that there would be a better place for you over here. Oh, you are now our roommate. You seem to be at the same level. Yeah, exactly. And they mock him, and they prepare a covering for him, a sheet of worms and maggots.
That's a fascinating passage, in parallel in many ways.
Yes. Yeah.
Now the difference here, Alden, you read about Mount Zaphon and then Sheol. Mm-hmm. Those are as extreme as you can get.
Because the top and the bottom.
That's right. Zaphon, certainly in Canaanite thought, was where the god El, the chief god, lived. And that's as high as you could get. You can't top Zaphon. It's the mountain of the north. Shows up actually several times in the Psalms too.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you claim to be, but let me show you your quarters.
Yes.
And they're in Sheol.
And it might be. I mean, the amazing thing about Scripture is that you can try to get away from God. You can go to the heights. You can go to the depths. But God said, I will pursue you there. See, so the one true God, he's the master of everything. And any human who thinks that they can set their throne above the stars of God, as Lucifer did here, won't work.
I find that there is a new element here. We have mentioned several times in our discussions here in the past weeks that in Isaiah we have a blend of God's chesed, loving kindness, and also of his judgments. But somehow when it comes to the pride of Babylon, we see now the prophet using the language of irony and even sarcasm. Mm-hmm. And the authors of the Bible do not use that frequently, but we find it here. Probably that happens whenever the prophets deal with an epitome of that Babylonian pride, or a pride that sets itself either equal to God or above God.
Or Tyre in Ezekiel.
That's correct.
Or even, I was thinking as you were talking, Stravko, about Elijah and the prophets of Baal. Because if we really translated his taunt mm-hmm. to the prophets of Baal, we would recognize the satire and the mm-hmm. biting irony mm-hmm. of a God who seems to be asleep, maybe on a journey, might even be in the restroom. I mean, that's, if we could get to the original Hebrew, it's something like that. Why? Would prophets do that? Well, yes, they do, and we see it here too.
And Jesus did it too when he said, and you, Capernaum, will you be lifted up all the way to the sky? No, you will go down to the grave, to Hades.
Right. Now, I'm wondering, as we're thinking about pride and arrogance, that especially, and even the satire, that especially if these were groups, national groups, that had created problems for Israel or Judah in the past, then there would be some good news that this would be taken care of. And these speeches against foreign nations would then remind Israel that God is going to take care of people who oppress his people. He's going to do that. Mm-hmm. And in the process, he's going to remind Israel that they've got problems of their own and they need to work those out. But the external threats, God has in his sights. And if we think about the Old Testament, a sense of divine sovereignty, that probably fits fairly well. Any particular oracles or speeches against the nations that have drawn your attention, or any texts within them? This is a large section.
You know, I like the idea that the nations of the world were God's children. And I do not like to translate like daughter of Babylon, but daughter Babylon or daughter Zion. And it is not just a product of someone's imagination, that God had a plan for those nations as well. And that's what the end of chapter 19 is all about.
Yeah, that's
we shouldn't miss that one.
Yeah, so. That's a marvelous thing. Go ahead, carry on.
It says, let's read the words in verse, starting with verse 23 of chapter 19. In that day, usually referring to the day of the Lord, God's intervention, the day of the Lord. There will be a highway from Egypt to Assyria, the two enemies, the one in the south, the other one in the north.
South and the north.
The Assyrians will go to Egypt and the Egyptians to Assyria. The Egyptians and Assyrians will worship together. In that day, Israel will be the third, along with Egypt and Assyria, a blessing on the earth. The Lord Almighty will bless them, saying, blessed be Egypt, my people. That's Ami from the book of Hosea, a technical term for God's covenant people.
That's right, covenant.
Assyria, my handiwork, and Israel, my inheritance. It's powerful.
You know, one of the things that this ties in here immediately, one of the amazing things about the God of the Old Testament, He repents more often than anyone else. You know, it's so often in the name of prophecy, we put labels, we attach things and say, all right, that's the end of you because God said so. But you have these amazing indications in the Old Testament that, yes, these damning speeches against the nations, but these marvelous visions of restoration.
Mm-hmm. And I think that the idea here of these speeches as somehow at least the beginnings of comfort that Israel, Judah will be protected, are captured in these little snippets all the way through. If you read these chapters through, and not everybody likes to do that, but if you read them through, you'll see these little snippets. It's going to be okay for Judah. It's going to be all right for Jerusalem. It's going to be a future that has some promise to it.
I want to tempt Stravko to say something about 24 to 27. I know there's a fire burning in his bones there.
When we dealt with chapters 7 to 9 and maybe stretching to 11, that we call the Book of Emmanuel, we have dealt with the oracles against the nations. And chapters 24 to 27 we call a little apocalypse. Mm-hmm. And there is enough here, enough material to discuss for a whole year. Devastation or desolation of the earth, chapter 24. Chapter 25 begins the tale of two cities. The city that stands against God comes to an end, and it becomes a heap of ruins. And chapter 26 introduces a strong city where God makes salvation. And the book of Revelation builds on these two. When the city of Babylon is finally, it comes to an end, then the city of God descends on earth. There are wonderful things here, but there is one that probably many of our listeners may not have noticed, and that is that there are two songs about the vineyard in the book of Isaiah. The first one we didn't have time to deal with a few weeks ago. It's in chapter 5. It's the better known. But in chapter 27, we have the song of a fruitful vineyard.
So we've got the reverse and the contrast. Beautiful. Thank you. At the end of this story, a story of what looks like gloom and doom, a light dawns by means of these odd speeches, a reminder of God's plans for protection and provision in the face of threats against us. Thank you again, Alden and Stravko. I want to welcome you again back next week as we continue our discussions of the prophet Isaiah, this time the historical interlude about King Hezekiah in 36 to 39. My thanks to Steve Cochran, the producer of Probe, and to all of you for listening. Probe. I'm Doug Clark.
You've been listening to Probe, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla College and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you may call 509-527-2194 or email probe@wwc.edu. Join us again next week at this same time for Probe.